You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive Budget Beach Finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Generations Riviera Maya Resort and do your deal at CheapCaribbean.com.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com. Symbiotica.com.
Warning. This podcast contains explicit language and details acts of violence. Listener discretion is advised.
When you put on a television show, there's a high chance that it's about the cops. Television shows about the police have been some of the most popular since the 1950s, when TVs were first introduced to American households. Police officers and departments collaborate with production teams to give them an up-close look at things from their point of view. People hurt by the police are rarely given the same opportunity. Over 70 years of crime dramas has had an impact on how we view the institution of policing and how we look at each other. And some of these shows have highlighted things like deputy gangs and given them a positive spin.
LA is not safe.
This is A Tradition of Violence, a history of deputy gangs inside the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Over the years, police dramas have mirrored the fears and ideals of the people writing the stories, which are overwhelmingly white men. Columnist Alyssa Rosenberg wrote about this extensively for The Washington Post in 2016. In the 1950s, these programs encouraged the public to put their faith in so-called law and order style governance. In the 1960s, police procedurals, also called crime dramas, inflated fear about increasing rates of crime. In the 1980s, Bruce Willis saved a skyscraper full of office workers from a radical East German, and Sean Penn battled the Crips and the Bloods. A century ago, the International Association of Chiefs of Police adopted a resolution condemning the movie business because, according to the group's president, quote, "the police are sometimes made to appear ridiculous." The Supreme Court ruled in 1915 that movies were not protected by the First Amendment. It took 30 years to reverse that decision. But as the industry grew bigger, richer, and more powerful, the relationship with police began to soften. Studios needed the cops to cover up the antics of its stars, like the rape and manslaughter trials of Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle, a silent film comedian. So it was in their best interest to get along. This meant bringing on police to be technical advisors on productions to give their opinions about how things were written and performed. One of those advisors would inspire a show that changed the course of television history. Dragnet premiered on TV in 1951. The show takes its name from the police system of using coordination to apprehend suspects. It was created by actor Jack Webb, who was inspired by the tales of a Los Angeles Police Department detective who was advising on a movie Webb acted in. Dragnet started as a radio program, but as a television show, it created the procedural formula that is still followed by shows today. Webb stars as Police Detective Sergeant Joe Friday. Webb had a close relationship with then LAPD Chief William Parker, an outspoken racist who introduced segregationist policies within the department. Every single script was approved by the LAPD. Anything they didn't like was cut out of the story. Inconvenient realities like Parker banning the hiring of Black officers weren't included either. In exchange, Dragnet got to use real police officers, vehicles, and equipment during production, free of charge. That type of collaboration became a model for other shows that followed. In 1955, Highway Patrol was created after a commissioner demanded that his own public relations division, quote, get us a show like Dragnet. FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover had full script approval on ABC's The FBI, which ran for 10 years, starting in 1965. Hoover also politically vetted the cast. Today, it's expected for police shows to have cops working as consultants. Writers and actors go on ride-alongs with local police. For the past 10 years, about 20% of all scripted broadcast TV shows have been about police, according to analysis from The Hollywood Reporter. Within scripted dramas, cop shows account for half of all broadcast programming. 40% of the top-watched television shows in 2020 were about the police. Studies have shown that all of this police programming has an effect on your perceptions.
So I am Kelly Roselle. I am the Chief Marketing and Storytelling Officer with Color of Change. Our mission is really to make it a more human and less hostile world for Black people in America. We're really working to advance racial equity and hold corporations in the entertainment industry accountable.
Why are television shows about the police so popular?
I think it really comes down to what sells. I think we, as viewers of content, we really invest a lot mentally and emotionally in this content. And there is this want for information. And I think that people watch these shows to learn and also entertain themselves. But what ultimately happens is it begins to inform their beliefs about the world. And instead of it being this escape, it really becomes this thing that informs their view on life. I would define copaganda as this misinformation and misleading that media creates around the criminal justice system.
Who are the people that are writing these shows?
We know the key players like Dick Wolf and Law and Order, but overall, we're seeing that the people writing the shows are not the people with the real authentic stories and the lived experiences.
In 2020, Color of Change and the USC Annenberg Norman Lear Center's Media Impact Project published a landmark report entitled Normalizing Injustice. It found that cop-centered television shows are inaccurate and give viewers a warped view of the criminal justice system. I helped work on the second subsequent report, which is due out soon.
In our first report, 81% of showrunners in TV, that was 21 out of the 26 shows that we analyzed, at least 81% of writers were white, with only 9% being Black. And then across the genre, 20 of the 26 series had either no Black writers or just one Black writer. And then when it comes to women, only 37% of writers across the genre were women, and only 11% were women of color. We've seen a lot of stories from young Black creators and producers and writers that have been on sets, on social media, speak out about their experiences of mistreatment or not having an actual voice. And until these sets are set up with decision makers that are not necessarily all white, there's always going to be this struggle of getting Black voices heard and having that level of respect in these environments. We know historically within corporate America, there is a lot of nepotism. People are hiring the people that they know. There's a lack of data being captured. How can you know who you're not hiring if you're not measuring anything? Ultimately, they just need to be intentional, and we have not seen that. So decision makers are hiring the people that they want, that they know, that are a part of this very small pool of people within the industry.
Within that small pool, experiences with the police are very limited.
It really ties back to the PR machine that the police unions have used Hollywood for. And it really comes down to giving people experiences like ride-alongs. I think in order to really understand police, they do these. They actually invite directors and showrunners and producers and writers and talent. And they do these ride-alongs to show the experience and really get the industry bought in on the work of the criminal justice system. And then these people take what they saw on this ride-along and turn it into what they believe is an accurate representation of the criminal justice system. There are just simple language and things that are written into the script, saying words like thugs. We still see that, but it also shows up in characters. I think, you know, one of the biggest things is shining this light that police are heroes and they don't do wrong. And if they do wrong, it's justified because they're in the fight for good. So it's not framed as corrupt. It's framed as what they have to do to be a hero.
Data from the report shows that scripted crime series depicted criminal justice professionals coded to be good guys committing wrongful actions more than coded bad guys. The bad behavior was rarely acknowledged on screen as such. When it was, that acknowledgement came from a person of color or a woman. Researchers say this may have conveyed the idea that acknowledging wrongful actions is relegated to women and people of color and not to be expected of white men.
Crime TV genre as a whole really just perpetuates this false notion about crime, hero narratives about law enforcement, and distorted representations about Black people, and not just Black people, other communities of color and women. And these hero narratives, they really mislead viewers, especially in the context of police and police gangs, which are the antithesis of how heroically cops are portrayed on television. It's completely sensationalizing for entertainment, and they're able to be corrupt because there's always this redeeming moment that shows why it was done.
People of color were also used to validate wrongful behavior through being depicted as perpetrating the bad acts or endorsing them. Kelly says that's a product of a homogenous writer's room.
These shows, they often minimize racism and dismiss the need for this real police accountability. They portray illegal and often racist behaviors of criminal justice practitioners as justifiable, necessary, and even heroic. But we've also found that Black characters are used as validators of wrongful behavior, and that's through either depicting them as perpetrators or supportive of wrongful actions. Excessive force by police is also represented as rare and not as harmful, which is categorically false, and it really misrepresents the realities of police violence. The effects are the harmful misrepresentations that people walk away with as real core beliefs. They invisibilize reality. There are people out there that think that Black people don't experience racism because it doesn't happen in these shows. There are people who believe that their white police officers can never be racist and it's all a lie. Or they're dismissing or making fun of people that are protesting and that are activists because in their world, these things don't exist. And they believe that racism is over. So when you're watching these shows and they remove the accurate portrayals of people's lived experiences and the criminal justice system, people walk away with a belief that none of this stuff exists. It is all made up and Black people are the problem.
Is there any value in cop-centered television programs?
I think there can be if they tell an authentic story. And that's really what we want to do and what we're pushing to do. And that's what we're creating resources for the industry to be able to do is tell authentic stories. I think for the longest time, there have been so many Black stories that have had to be suppressed. And it's going to be very interesting the more we're able to give more Black voices this space to tell stories. There are years upon years worth of stories that aren't going to be comfortable. And there are new stories that aren't going to be comfortable. But I think that the more accurate we can be at telling these stories, the more we can start to really change the narrative around Black people, around the criminal justice system. This goes back to people's perceptions and beliefs, and it shapes how they go out into the world. It shapes how they go into their jobs. It shapes how they go out and vote. And people are making these decisions in real life based on things that they've seen on television. There's always going to be this tension. There's always going to be a misunderstanding between people. And if we can tell the authentic story for people to then absorb that and start to see the world differently, they might make different decisions when it's time to hire, when it's time to get out and vote, that have huge implications for the future of our country. What we've seen is that there are more shows that are taking this different route and being created by different people and taking this different path, but there's also been an increase in shows in the crime TV genre. As we've seen this year, there's really this like industry-wide content recession where overall the industry has ordered less shows in every genre, but there is still this influx in crime TV genre. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And, you know, I think we'll have to be really vigilant about what shows end up being cut and canceled or greenlit. Are they going to reduce the ones that are doing the most harm, or are they going to cancel the shows that are doing the most good? And I also think that, you know, what we're seeing is that in these changes, we're seeing increased representation. But because there's increased representation, that doesn't mean that we're seeing less copaganda.
Color of Change has several proposals to fix the issues with police shows.
In our first report, we put forth, you know, a series of recommendations for the entertainment industry to really establish new standards of storytelling that are truthful and include the real impacts of racial injustice in society and in the criminal justice system. And we are constantly calling for writers' rooms to hire people with real life understandings of the criminal justice system and to diversify the ranks of creative talent. People that are intentional about making these changes are coming to organizations like Color of Change to have conversations with us to make sure that the content that they put out is not harmful and does not reflect all of these stereotypes and tropes and misrepresentations of the criminal justice system. Some of those we're looking at scripts, but we're also getting into the writer's room. That's why resources like our writer's room database of experts is so important, because we are offering several people across different areas. It could be a forensic expert. It could be somebody who is a doctor and can talk about accurate representations when it comes to what happens in hospitals and how people of color and especially Black people are impacted by these systems. We have experts that are actually talking and consulting and available for this work. These new standards must be supported by real incentives that reward responsible storytelling, as well as like consequences that hold people accountable when they don't remove these harmful stereotypes and narratives. There has to be a demand for it. And I think viewers are starting to smarten up and create that demand. But ultimately, there's a bottom line. And in a few years, and maybe the next 5 to 10, we'll see it standardized as a double bottom line across the industry. The bottom line is always money. And when you add a double bottom line, it's about money and doing what's right, telling these authentic stories and having a real responsibility to not only viewers, but just culture and society. And a lot of times we know that corporate America doesn't function like that. The one question they want to know, is it going to make us money? And sometimes it gets really dirty and they do things that make money that are not good for society. So until they add that second bottom line, you know, that's when we'll continue to see a lot of the things that are harmful.
One program that aired briefly from 2018 to 2019 homed in on a harmful practice that has plagued the LA County Sheriff's Department for the past 60 years, deputy gangs. More after the break.
Do You dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
What if we told you about a major breakthrough on awesome savings on all-inclusive beach vacays?
OMG, this could break the case.
Case? I'm talking about CheapCaribbean.com. It's full of hot savings. At CheapCaribbean.com, score an extra $175 off site-wide on vacations of 4 nights or more now through June 3rd. A swim up bar in Punta Cana or dip your toes in the sand on the shores of Cancun.
We gotta take this show on the road.
Start at CheapCaribbean.com.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful Beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Today, it's expected that if you're working on a police show, you're going to have some current or former cops in the writer's room. And sometimes, those guys get to make their own shows. Joe Halpin is one of them, and he's an admitted tattooed member of the Grim Reapers, whose members killed Gilberto Gutierrez. We discussed the gang in episode 3. Unfortunately, he declined to do an interview for this podcast, but there's quite a bit of information about him available. Joe was born in Luton, England. He moved to the United States when he was 12. In 1984, he joined LASD, according to county records. He told a reporter for Drama Quarterly that he started out working in the jails, which is the usual course for new recruits. He moved on to become a training officer and field officer before moving into undercover narcotics operations in South Los Angeles. He also did work with the FBI and DEA. Remember, the task forces that did this work in the past have been federally indicted, like in the late 1980s Arco Narco scandal, which was discussed in episode 3. Here's former Deputy Randy Higgins, who saw Grim Reapers use the same tactics that led to the indictments.
Those training officers used exactly the same tactics when they were training officers as they did when they were on the task force. That was back in the heyday, crack cocaine. So you stopped somebody on the street, they had crack cocaine, you booked it, but you kept it. Because you might want to have probable cause to arrest somebody else on another day. Every patrol deputy had the same opportunity to take money, take drugs. You could stash it and use it another day. The money obviously bought some boats and dates and baby mama support and all the things that deputies do with their money. It was not just Arco Narco. It was throughout the department. And everybody knew it.
Joe Halpin told reporter Lou Wayne Lee at the Times columnist that he became a member of the Grim Reapers gang. I've asked an actor to read what Joe said.
The gang starts out with people with their backs against the wall and protecting each other. You're in this weird world when you're a street cop. You don't have the support of the administrators because those are political people who are not going to do anything to defend you. And then the public at large, every encounter you have is a negative one because cops aren't called to any good situations and you have to immediately take control of the situation. So you're being bombarded by the negativity in dealing with the public that you end up banding together to protect each other.
On January 6th, 1995, Joe was wrapping up a 3-month investigation that led him and his team to a home in Lawndale. He told the Los Angeles Times they searched a car and found 20 kilos of cocaine. No one was arrested. The paper says that investigators found information at the house that took them to Cottonwood Street in Palmdale a few days later. There, Joe was involved in what was the biggest drug bust in Antelope Valley history at that point. He and other deputies seized an estimated $29 million worth of cocaine and found $264,000 in cash. Joe told a reporter that the home had been the base of a distribution center. He said the raid, quote,
"We'll delay them for a while because they'll have to look for another place to distribute from."
Deputy District Attorney Marion M.J. Klein told the L.A. Times that it is unusual for a small investigative team based at a sheriff's station to make this major a drug bust and that, quote, "in the real world, it will not make a terrible dent." By 2002, Joe says he was the leader of the Grim Reapers, but his marriage was also ending and he was being investigated for misconduct. He recounted the moment he realized he was being followed.
"I was driving and I noticed someone off to my right. And the way he sat in his car, I thought, that guy must be an off-duty cop. I kept driving, made a right, and the guy went with me. I thought, that's strange. Made another right, and then he and the other cars went with me too. So I thought, now we're going into a circle, so I'm being followed. I pulled into an ATM and I pretended I was walking up to the ATM and watched them park. And they backed into spaces, which is another tell because cops always want to get out fast. So I started walking toward one of them. And as soon as I did, he took off. I got his plate, and I was in an undercover car, a truck. I ran the plate, and it came back no record on file, which tells me they're cops."
Joe says he called his lieutenant.
"I said, Murray, I'm being followed. He goes, you're being paranoid. A half hour later, he called me and said, okay, somebody is following. I found out later that my department was following me, but they got worried that there would be ramifications from that. So they farmed it out to LAPD, and I burned them on the first day."
Joe was suspected of falsifying search warrants and consent forms.
"That was really the turning point for me. I said, I'm no longer effective as a cop. Obviously, they've lost confidence in me because they feel like I'm doing things illegal. I've lost confidence in myself because I don't think I'm the same guy that first pinned on the badge. I thought, I'm not doing anybody any good, and I could end up like a lot of cops, being either a drunk or a madman at the end of the career."
By that point, Joe was also doing celebrity bodyguard work on the side, which is a very popular hustle for cops. He says that while shadowing Steven Seagal during a trip to Poland, he decided to write about his experiences as a criminal deputy gang member.
"It wasn't anything I was looking to do, but once I sat down and started doing it, I became obsessed with it and doing it well. There are a lot of people in this business who are glorified tech advisors who never quite learned to write, but they're kept around because they're great in the writer's room and great at story. But I wanted to make sure I wasn't one of those people. I eventually got out of low-end features and got into television because I realized that's where the real writers and real experienced storytellers were nowadays."
In 2005, he retired from LASD and sold a script. He was officially part of the entertainment industry. He wrote on several independent films before landing his first television writing job in 2010 on the show Dark Blue, a show about undercover cops in L.A. He continued to write on police shows like True Justice, Hawaii Five-O, and Secrets and Lies. By 2017, he created and sold a television show based on his time with the Grim Reapers called The Oath.
You dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now. With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Ocean by H10 Hotels and do your deal at cheapcaribbean.com.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Joe Halpin, creator and showrunner of The Oath, declined to do an interview for this podcast, but we were able to track down someone who worked on the show.
My name is Mark Valadez, and I'm a writer-producer. My position on The Oath was executive story editor. I also wrote one episode. The creator of the show is a fellow named Joe Halpin, who is a former Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputy. He's a friend of mine. And I was a mentor. Joe was developing for Sony the project that would become The Oath, which, you know, at the time, I believe it was called Reapers, and was based loosely on his own experience as a member of the Reapers, which was a gang of working police officers within the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. He wrote a pilot that fictionalized that story.
Mark was brought in to work on The Oath very early on.
We met on the show ICE, and he was going to leave to run his own show, which was The Oath. We had this good rapport. He liked my writing, and he invited me to join him on staff. I think it helped that my father had been a police officer. I was able to bring, you know, some sphere of secondhand experience, if nothing else, to the project. We also had a consulting producer, a veteran female writer named Kathy McCormick, who had worked on Law and Order. We had another staff writer, Elizabeth Padden. The Oath gave her first produced episode of television. And I was probably the only person of color on that staff. I think in the case of The Oath, Joe just brought in writers he had relationships with that he knew would help him execute this vision as best as he could.
What was the culture of the writer's room like?
It was a pretty harmonious room. We were mostly on the same page, and, you know, we worked pretty well together, writing the show together. My father was in law enforcement for a little while. You know, I've known quite a few cops, and I think the best of them will attest to that. You know, it attracts the best of people, and it can also attract the very worst of people. And it can bring out the best in certain people and bring out the worst in them. It's an institution that is, like any other institution, but probably even more so than most, is prone to corruption and rot from within. And that can be very pervasive. And for me, you know, to explore that narratively, you know, that's a great fun sandbox to play in as a writer.
Do you think that there is systemic racism in law enforcement in the United States?
I have to say yes. I mean, I think we've seen evidence of that. It's so deeply entrenched over, you know, the course of generations. The people they police are naturally going to see them as an occupying army.
The show revolves around a deputy gang called the Ravens. Its former leader, Tom Hammond, begins the series incarcerated for misconduct as his son, Steve, tries to keep the gang together. He's helped along by members Pete Ramos, Karen Beach, and his adopted black brother, Cole. It's clear that the gang is the most important thing in their lives.
She made a choice. The second she got her tattoo, nobody was more important to her than us.
No doubt.
After listening to this podcast, you'd be able to recognize some of the other deputy gangs for their real-life counterparts, like the Berserkers, who are made up of racist, mostly white deputies. Remember the Vikings in episode 2?
They were definitely, I can tell you, they were based on the Vikings.
Here's attorney Carol Watson, who took on the gang in court.
We were attacking the Vikings. They were a neo-Nazi white supremacist group.
In The Oath, the deputy gangs run various criminal schemes within the areas they patrol, and only the area they patrol, or they will be met with consequences from other deputy gangs. People living in the neighborhoods where the deputy gangs of The Oath operate in are often subjected to high rates of violence at the hands of deputies. In the opening of the series, we see Steve Hammond and his crew of Ravens carry out an armed robbery, which seems to be a specialty of theirs. Several police officers in the Los Angeles area have been arrested for doing exactly this. Other gangs in the show traffic children for sexual abuse or sell illegal, potentially lethal opioids on the street. They are often working with the backing of other criminal enterprises, like the Russian Mafia or corporate America. Not everyone is supportive of the gangs. One character's wife discovers that he is a member, and it nearly ends their marriage.
I went online. It says the Berserkers have been investigated before as a cop gang.
Articles like that just click.
You said your tattoo had something to do with station pride. It's a gang symbol, isn't it? Don't lie to me, Pete.
No, I mean, not exactly.
The gangs have a tenuous but mostly peaceful relationship with each other, but they are always looking to collect dirt. When someone does break the rules, it can lead to severe punishment. Twice, we see inked officers have their tattoos forcibly removed by other people, one with a blowtorch and the other with a knife. Others are even killed for breaking the gang's rules. In the world of the Oath, the FBI is wise to deputy gangs. Agent Aria Price is preparing a RICO case on them and forces the Ravens to cooperate for reduced sentences. She enlists Damon Byrd, a young black agent, to infiltrate the gang and collect intel for the case. Byrd ends up sympathizing with the gang, which ends up being his undoing. But throughout the series, the deputy gang members are presented in ways to make you sympathize with them. Steve Hammond leads his crew to carry out an armed robbery on the home of a doctor, but it's the doctor who was scamming his mother dying of cancer. Karen Beach has a record of excessive uses of force, which she begrudgingly unpacks in tearful therapy sessions. Pete Ramos constantly lies to his wife, but according to him, it's for her own protection. Mark says many of the plot lines come from Joe Halpin's stories about his time as a deputy.
This show was inspired by his own experiences living and working within that culture within the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. And he wanted to, you know, create a show built around that. Now, I will say this, as it evolved, you know, in the whole development process, the Oath drifted farther from the actual reality, I think, of what Joe might have experienced. And we were getting notes from the studio to make this thing accessible, to make it, a fun ride for the audience. We tried to create like a thrill ride, but we also tried to layer it with some moral ambiguity. He's told us stories, and our fiction pales in comparison to the real stories. I think in the whole process of making the show, it started to get a little watered down a little bit. You know, plot got in the way. When we got into the production phase, that's always a stressful time. You're dealing with all of the compromises of actually being on set, what you want to do versus what you actually can do and what's in the budget to do. What Joe used to say was all ships rise on a high tide. He wanted us to feel like we had ownership in the show, that it wasn't just, that we weren't just working for the showrunner, that we were contributing and we had a piece of this thing to be proud of creatively. And we would break the stories together. Early on, that was probably the most difficult and challenging part of the job, was plotting out the season arc, episode by episode, all 10 episodes, where this story was going. And we did it in pretty extensive detail, but we were also at the same time getting notes back.
Mark says the plot changed several times over the course of writing.
We went through a couple different iterations of this thing before we finally were able to find the version that we could live with and that Sony also could live with. We tried a lot of different things. We were mining Joe's, you know, career for stories. But I think Sony also had mandates about this is what they want. They wanted a big bad, you know, a central villain, strong central villain. Sony was very adamant that they wanted this to be, even though it was in the cop genre, and it was technically a cop drama, they wanted it to be like unlike any other police drama on the air. because we were dealing with basically a gang within this fictional police department, Sony had certain elements that they wanted to see in there. But we kind of had to really rework the story according to their notes and kind of like, you know, shoehorn it into this shape that they wanted, because, of course, they're the ones paying for this show. So I think there were stories that we wanted to do that we might not have been able to get to because it was a serialized show and there was an arc that we had to follow, and we had to arrive at a certain place by episode 10 and be able to have the audience be able to feel that resolution. I think our show became more of a heightened reality. If I'd had my druthers, you know, I'm a big admirer of David Simon, and I, you know, I love shows like The Wire, and more recently the project that he did, We Own This City, which address the very ills that we're talking about and the systemic corruption that we're talking about. And I would have liked to have done something that hewed a little closer to that.
It's evident from some of the comments made by members of the cast that they too began to feel connected to the deputy gangs. Lisa DeMarais of Deadline reported in 2018 that the cast seemed, quote, extremely happy when showrunner Joe Halpin remarked at an event that the ensemble could have been asked to join a cop gang. Katrina Law, who portrayed Karen Beach, cheered, quote, balls on. She also described the gang, quote, as family, with a, quote, moral compass that may be a little off. As the series goes on, the tone shifts in an attempt to make the viewer buy in, too. Darcel Riquette from the Chicago Tribune asked Corey Hardict, who portrays Cole Hammond, whether the characters have any redeeming qualities. He responded, quote, there's a lot of redeeming qualities. It's more like a slow burn. It unfolds after episode 7, after 7, 8, 9, and 10. There are a bunch of great qualities. That's why Joe Halpin set it up like that.
Did you have any other police officers, law enforcement officers, cops working as consultants on this show?
Yeah, Joe had a former colleague of his who came on board as a technical advisor. And he was, you know, he was there in the room, you know, during part of the writing process to kind of look at things and see if we were being completely accurate. When we went into production in San Juan, he was also there and worked with the actors and advised them how to carry themselves like a cop.
Was your consultant also a member of a deputy gang?
I believe he was, yes. Yeah.
The consultant, Reinhard Scherger, was a lieutenant in the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. He worked as an instructor and investigator. He worked as a civilian investigator for the department as recently as 2020. Not all of the cast members appear to have identified with the deputy gang members, though. Elizabeth Rahm, who portrays an FBI agent, told UPI, quote, it's a very gritty, very uncomfortable show. The corruption that we tackle is a real thing, and it never goes away.
Do you think that television has an impact on how people view or act in the world?
I do. I feel like people often take their cues from popular culture and from what they see portrayed on the screen. I think The Oath, it kind of sheds some light on those dark corners, even if it's in a fictional way. Kind of lets the audience know, opens an audience's eyes to that might not otherwise have thought that existed. The Oath, we're like any other show, we bend reality, we truncate reality, and you know, bend it to our purposes. I don't think we're the show to look to for a completely realistic portrait of, you know, criminal justice system. It might be hard not to inadvertently glorify something. Tony Soprano was the hero. He was an anti-hero, supremely screwed up, and a sociopath. And our show had its fair share of sociopaths. So, and there's always that danger that people will glorify something like that, or, you know, or miss the point of it.
Deputy gangs are just part of a deeper problem within the culture at the LA County Sheriff's Department. But not all bad deeds are committed by deputy gang members. Wrongful arrests, brutal beatings, and even killings are carried out regularly by members inside and outside of deputy gangs. That's coming up next week.
H-double-O-D, the whole hood know me. Fuck the police, I'm a fucking hood trophy.
You've been listening to A Tradition of Violence, the history of deputy gangs in the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Hosted and executive produced by Cerise Castle. Music by Yellow Hill and Steels. Voice acting by Garrett Werner. If you're enjoying A Tradition of Violence, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a written review. For breaking news and updates on deputy gangs, follow at LASD Gangs on social media. To support Cerise's reporting and for exclusive bonus content, subscribe to the LASD Gangs Patreon. We want to hear from you. If you have a question about deputy gangs or the LASD, please send an email to lasdgangs@gmail.com.
This is for the hood.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now. With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Generations Riviera Maya Resort and do your deal at cheapcaribbean.com.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.